This is the Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Frankly, it's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
We are the Diehards right here, Sports Map Radio Network. Patrick Gilroy tonight sitting in for Anthony Pepe. I guess I'm going to be like Pepe now and start the show with, and my friend tonight is, Bobby, I'm going to kill the last name.
You nailed it before
Krabinski,
the show.
But it's
different. Yeah, see, you got to have confidence.
I have no confidence in a new name. It normally, when I was doing a lot more radio a few years ago, whenever the Bruins were in the playoffs, I was forced to talk Bruins, and I'm not a hockey guy. So I would call people that were hockey people, how do I pronounce this name, this name, this name, and literally be at my day job repeating these European names, and my boss is like, are you crazy? What are you doing? And if I had had more than a couple hours warning tonight, I would have been doing the same thing with your last name, Bobby. It's just, it's what, you got to feel comfortable coming in here, talking to the world with this massive audience that we have here on the Sports Map Radio Network, and I don't want to introduce you with the wrong name.
Well, you nailed it for starters. And then, yeah, I can remember when I was working for IMG Audio, one of the first names that was difficult just looking at it before the broadcast was Bon Secours Arena, the home of the Clemson Tigers.
Yep.
And so that was one where you're pulling up YouTube trying to hear how people pronounce it. You're getting different pronunciations. And so luckily I was able to stick the landing there and get it right. But it's certainly, like you said, much easier once you hear a name, no matter what it is, whether it's a venue or a person. And then after that, you lock it down and you're able to get it.
You lock it down. I mean, I'll never forget the first time I said Giannis Antetokounmpo. And now I can say it. It rolls right off my tongue. But everybody butchered it. And to that point, people still butcher his first name. They're pronouncing it with a G. And how many times has Giannis had to come out and say it's not Giannis, it's Giannis. So we're not going to butcher your name here tonight. We're going to take you guys all the way up until 10 o'clock this evening Eastern time. Talk lots of basketball because, of course, Bobby is from Basketball Insiders. I'm the Hoophead. We've got a game going on right now. Celtics come up in about an hour. We'll get to all of that with you guys when we come back. We are the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
We are the Diehards right here, Sports Map Radio Network. Patrick Gilroy alongside Bobby Krivinski tonight from Basketball Insiders. Hanging out here until 10 o'clock Eastern time. No Anthony Pepe. And because no Pepe's here, I guess that means there's no rules, Bobby.
That's right.
The boss,
the inmates are running the asylum.
Absolutely,
right now.
The boss is the way. So the kids will play. I guess is what we're going to say about this show here tonight. So I know people tune in at specific times because they want to hear, you know, five burning questions. They want to hear the rundown. They want to hear everything that people have come to know Anthony Pepe for. We're scrapping it all. The only thing that we're bringing back to the table, I guess, that is typical of a Pepe show, is Rick Horro, the sports professor, will join us coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Until then, we're going to take this opportunity here to really cater, I think, to the basketball audience out there. And there is a significant basketball audience that is itching to talk about the playoffs. The playoffs are here. The play-in games are happening right now, Bobby. And I want to get your opinion on this because I'm conflicted on this whole play-in situation. We heard what LeBron James had to say about it, and LeBron clearly wasn't a fan at the time. It's a joke to me that he inserts himself into this conversation, but we can get to that a little bit later. But for a team like the Celtics that, look, they've struggled all year. They're 500. They're the seventh seed. They've got no shot at winning a championship. You look at the Western Conference, the Lakers, coming off a championship, they're the seventh seed. They're probably still the favorite to come out of the West.
Agreed.
So with all that being said, you know, they put this play-in tournament into play last year because of the COVID season, because of the bubble. And look, I'll listen to the argument that, hey, it's better for more markets, more fans of more teams to have an opportunity to go to the playoffs. Extend it from 8 to 10 in both conferences. That's four more opportunities for playoff teams. But players are fighting back against this. Coaches are fighting back against this. Is this something that you think has the potential to have staying power in the NBA, or is this a novelty that we'll look back at in 10 years and say, this is a two-year fluke because of the COVID situation?
No, I think this is here to stay. The NBA has no intention of getting rid of it. And so it's interesting that LeBron James, the first thing he said on the play-in tournament was in support of it.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing is all of a sudden when he realizes he might find himself having to go through it to get to the real playoffs, he's against it, and someone should be fired for creating this concept. Luka Doncic, same thing. Doesn't say a word about it until Dallas is starting to hover around the seventh seed, and all of a sudden he's very anti-play-in tournament. But this is a great concept. Like you said, I honestly thought the biggest detriment was going to be a quiet trade deadline, and I thought it was well worth that sacrifice. But we didn't get that. We had over 13 trades this year in one of the most active deadlines in recent seasons. So to me, it works as a safety net in case you have a team like the Lakers, for instance, one of your most prominent franchises in all of sports,
yep,
have the injuries be even more severe than they were for them this season. So let's say that they had fallen to ninth. You have that protection to keep them moving in the postseason. Or, for instance, if you're a team who is hot and you make a late run like the Wizards, now you're looking at a team who may not have championship aspirations legitimately, but is still an opponent that no one really wants to deal with, including their first opponent in the play-in, the Celtics.
Yeah, and from a Celtics perspective, this is worst-case scenario.
Absolutely.
You're in the play-in tournament, and you're going in against arguably the hottest team in the league over the last 45 days or so. That team is firing, at least offensively, on all cylinders. We know about their top-level talent. But what's been interesting to me in watching them is this re-evolution of Russell Westbrook. Go back to the start of the season, and the Celtics were playing the Wizards, and Westbrook looked slow, he looked old, he looked disinterested, to the point where Cedric Maxwell, color commentator for the Celtics radio network, said Westbrook's all done. I vividly remember him saying, Westbrook is all done. This is what happens to these guys that rely on their speed and athleticism. And he mentioned guys like both Isaiah Thomas's. He mentioned guys like Allen Iverson. And he thought that Westbrook was going down that same road, losing that burst, losing that initial step at the point of attack, the inability to take people off the dribble. And for Westbrook, he relied on that athleticism to make up for his lack of consistent shooting. All of a sudden, he seems to be the freakish athlete he used to be. And by the way, he's never shot the basketball better than he has the second half of this season. So has Westbrook found the fountain of youth? Is he healthy? Is he interested? Or is he doing this because he's looking for his next payday?
Well, so it's interesting that you brought up the undersized, diminutive point guards who don't age gracefully, because they are, in their own right, freakish athletes, and that is what allows them to create the necessary separation to score at the volume they do, like Isaiah Thomas and Allen Iverson. With Russell, it's the same deal in a 6'3", jacked, muscular
right
frame. And so this, for him, is how he's going to age and decline. We can see that he's on the back nine of his career. He's 32 years old.
Yep.
But what happens is you get stretches. Like last year, for instance, with Houston coming out of the All-Star break, he looks like an MVP-caliber candidate. Not at the top of the discussion, but if you're willing to go back to around that fifth spot or a little below it, you've got to bring his name up based on how well he was playing with the Rockets. This year, after that quad injury that torpedoed him last season, he's going through recovery for that, and then he gets healthy, and all of a sudden, he just became the first player in NBA history to average at least 26 points, 16 assists, and 13 rebounds in a calendar month. So with him, aging for him, as opposed to Isaiah Thomas and Allen Iverson, who kind of fall off the map, for Russell Westbrook, it's dealing with these injuries that limit his explosiveness, and when he doesn't have it, like you said, he's not particularly effective. But right now, he's healthy and rolling, and so is the Wizards.
So when you look at this Wizards team, they're an interesting bunch, but you know, we hear a lot here in Boston, and it's a conversation that takes place in NBA markets across the country. If you've got a great 1-2 punch, you generally are on the right path to success in the NBA. You need a minimum of two top 20 players to make any sort of a dent in the playoffs. So we could roll through the entire league, but, you know, in Boston, it's clearly Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. And when you look at that level of talent that the Celtics, that Danny Ainge was willing to move on from guys like Gordon Hayward and not bring in proper replacements because he believed in the evolution of these players and that they were going to take the next step in their progression to being multiple-time All-Stars and guys that are capable of carrying a franchise on their shoulders. You know, more shots for those guys was a better thing for the Boston Celtics. At least that's what they thought the case was going to be, and maybe it will be someday. But when you look at the Wizards' top talent and you look at guys like Russell Westbrook and of course, Bradley Beal, you could make the argument right now that those two are further ahead of guys like Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and are a more effective, better, more talented 1-2 punch. So for Celtics fans that think that this play-in tournament is just a formality on their doorstep, their path to the playoffs, I'm not feeling very good about the tournament from a fan's perspective, and I'm certainly not feeling good about what's going to go down tonight on national TV.
Well, there's a reason that Vegas has favored the road team, the lower seed in the Washington Wizards, for this matchup. They clearly think the Wizards are going to advance and lock down the seventh seed, and the Celtics have another play-in game ahead of them, which I would think they beat the Pacers, but I thought the Pacers were dead in the water coming into tonight's matchup against the Hornets, quite frankly. So to see them steamroll Charlotte has been surprising. They're not going to have Caris LeVert back, unfortunately. So I think the Celtics should be able to get to the real playoffs in a best-of-seven series. I also think, like we talked about during the break, they'd rather face the Sixers than the Brooklyn Nets. Not that I don't expect them to beat either one, but be more competitive against Philadelphia than against Brooklyn. And when it comes to this matchup against the Wizards, for those of you who think the Celtics are just going to show up and win because it's at TD Garden, Washington is 17-6 to end the season. In that time frame, they lead the league in scoring. They have the seventh best defensive rating, which is the points you allow per 100 possessions. They're top five in net rating. And in their last 20 games, this juggernaut of an offense, despite really only having two players that teams need to concern themselves with, they've scored more than 110 points in each of those 20 matchups, topped 120 13 times, and topped 130 five times. So this offense is as hot as it's been all season and is just really tough to stop because everyone who's off the ball is active. They're constantly running Beal off of screens when he doesn't have the ball. They know that if you play on top of him to try and deny him the ball, they just flip the screen and send him backdoor for a layup. They get to the free throw line more than any other team in the league. So they're a handful. And for a team like the Celtics, who, as athletic and undersized as they are, have consistently struggled to stay on a string defensively this season, it's going to be a huge test of their ability to communicate and, quite frankly, to show that mental toughness necessary to exude that kind of effort and energy possession after possession after possession.
We are the Diehards right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Patrick Gilroy, Bobby Kravinsky, hanging out with you guys until 10 o'clock, talking hoops with you guys tonight as the play-in tournament has begun. Right now, it is Indy all over Charlotte, 110-83 in Game 1 of the doubleheader on TNT. Game 2 comes up at 9 o'clock Eastern time, and that, of course, is the aforementioned Celtics and Wizards. Bobby, just don't take it personally if after 9 o'clock I sort of I don't know, get animated on the air. It's not you. It's not you. It's me. You know, the fan in me comes out. It is technically a playoff game. I can sit here and be analytical with you for the next hour, but the analytics go out the window and the emotions sort of come shining through. I have been the most frustrated Celtics fan all year, and it's been a frustrating year from start to finish. And I think that the majority of fans feel the same way I do. The optimist in me says, you know, it's the start of a new season. And if they've got any sort of, forget it, I mean, Kevin Garnett said it, so I'll say it. If they have any sort of grit and balls in their DNA, they show up tonight. And we're going to learn a lot about the potential leadership skills of a guy like Jason Tatum tonight. I know that Celtics fans and Danny Ainge like to claim that Marcus Smart is the de facto leader of this basketball team. Fine, I get it. But it's so hard in today's NBA to have your fourth, fifth, sixth best player be the leader. And it's interesting, and we'll get more into this coming up in the next segment, because you were young when all this was going down. But I was doing the Celtics post-game show on their flagship for years during the early days of the Paul Pierce, Antoine Walker era. And when you go back, and I did this for Pep a couple of weeks ago, I went back and I re-listened to some of those shows, and I reread some of the stuff that guys like Steve Bulpet and Jackie Mack were writing in the Globe and the Herald. And those two are as good as it gets when it comes to covering the NBA. Even Bob Ryan was much more active and involved back then, and he had a lot of opinions. Paul Pierce, for as talented as he was offensively, Paul Pierce didn't have the mental toughness back then. He wasn't the leader that people remember him as, the leader that he became, that he evolved to become after the Kevin Garnett trade, after the Ray Allen trade. Before that, he wanted out of town. He was the same guy that wrapped a knee tape around his head and his jaw following a playoff exit to the Pacers. Completely embarrassing himself in the franchise. He publicly demanded a trade after the Celtics had the worst record in the NBA in 2006. You know, this is a guy that struggled to embrace the leadership role, and that's why fans were so pissed and so divided when Danny Ainge pulled the trigger and traded Antoine Walker away. Antoine was exactly who Paul Pierce needed in his early days to be the leader, to be the guy that can be the lightning rod. Not quite as talented, but talented enough to put up 18-8, 20-10 on every single night, and charismatic enough to sort of deflect and have the reporters sort of hover to him because they knew that Antoine was good for a quote. And Antoine was the guy that would get in the ref's face and really allow Paul Pierce to be Paul Pierce. Go out there and score, kid. And they enjoyed each other, and Paul needed that early on in his career. I look at this franchise now, I look at this roster now, and I'm wondering tonight, without Jaylen Brown, I wonder who is going to be the guy that could be what Antoine Walker was to Paul Pierce, the guy that is capable of deflecting some of that attention, the guy that's capable of being a leader on the court that his teammates will respect because, A, he's a good leader, and B, he's an all-star level player. They don't have that guy. And that, to me, is a fundamental flaw with this basketball team. And it scares me as a fan that history may not repeat itself. And when I say that, I mean Jason Tatum, he could be on the trading block this offseason. You'd have to get a haul for him, but I don't think fans would be too pissed off if Danny Ainge moved on from Jason Tatum this offseason. And I think that would be a monumental mistake to give up on a 23-year-old kid when we've already gone through this once before, and Paul Pierce wound up becoming one of the most beloved Celtics of all time and just got named to next year's Hall of Fame class. So that's what I want you to think about as we go to break here, sort of compare and contrast those two. And is there somebody I'm not thinking about on this roster that can help elevate Jason Tatum to give the Celtics a fighting chance in this postseason? This is the Sports Map Radio Network. My name is Patrick Gilroy. His name is Bobby Kravinsky from Basketball Insiders. We'll continue our NBA conversation when we come back right here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
You know, Bobby, what you need to do now that the better weather is here, and this says spring, but it feels like summer. You look at the weather forecast,
gorgeous out.
80 degrees for the next week. Worked on the pool all weekend. It is now ready to be swam in, however you say it.
I think both work.
Both work? So if anybody wants to come on up to New Hampshire for a chilly swim on an 80-degree day, we can do that. But there's nothing like I've got an older Wrangler, and that's my play car because I'm not allowed to have a motorcycle while the kids are under 18. Took the top off of it, and the top will not go back on until the winter. But when you take the top off the Wrangler, it's time to check the brakes, check the oil, do all that stuff because it sits there for 6 months. My first thing I did was I stopped by O'Reilly Auto Parts for their spring break deals on car batteries, lawn and garden batteries, tools, brake kits, and more. You guys want to kick the season off right with fresh batteries for your car and for your lawn and garden gear. For a limited time, you purchase any Superstart lawn and garden battery, and that earns you a $10 gift card after mail-in rebate. Don't miss out on the savings. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every single day. So, Bobby, before we went to break, I was sort of revisiting Celtics past, NBA's past, and you know the shows that I used to do where we would be driven mad with callers, and it seemed like it was split down the middle. You were either an Antoine guy or a Paul Pierce guy. And I always made the argument that Paul needed Antoine. Antoine didn't need Paul, but Paul needed Antoine. And I see so many similarities, not only in the way that they play in Jason Tatum and in Paul Pierce, but in their personalities, in their demeanors, and in their unwillingness to be a natural leader for their basketball teams, at least at this age. When you look at Jason Tatum, do you see somebody that can evolve into becoming a leader, or do you think he's going to need that other guy that takes on some of that burden for him?
Well, so first, I want to just say one thing real quick about Paul Pierce is that he got stabbed and then played 82 games, didn't miss one, had one of his best seasons. And so I think I'm with you on Paul Pierce, the leader, was something that didn't come until he had Kevin Garnett there. And part of that is the relationship that they knew each other growing up. It made him a little more comfortable.
Yep.
And then, of course, Kevin Garnett's intensity and his demand that I came here to win championships for my legacy. I'm here to rejuvenate and resuscitate this entire franchise. Everyone's coming with me, whether you like it or not. And so that forced Paul Pierce into a leadership role, into greater commitment defensively. And the other component, and no, it's not a good sign of leadership, but I think Paul Pierce looked around at some of the teams he was on pre-Garnett's arrival, and he just wasn't going to be a leader for teams he didn't believe in. That's not the greatest vote for someone's maturity, but it's understandable. And at the time, he's still in his early to mid-20s, depending on what year you want to discuss. And even like Garnett, another parallel there is that he didn't want to leave Boston. He wasn't itching to jump ship, but he looked around at the situation and said, if this doesn't get any better, then I want out. They didn't get the top two picks with Durant and Oden there.
Yep.
They got fifth, where no one was talking about Jeff Green on that level, obviously. And so at that point, really the conversation intensified about maybe he goes to Dallas, for instance, or some other franchise where he can go and compete for championships. But luckily, it ended up happening here.
Sure.
Hat tip, Kevin McHale.
Yep.
And so with Jason Tatum, the first thing I'll say is that because he's more of a quiet leader, we have no idea how effective, how active he is in that role. And so it's almost like J.D. Drew on steroids, where J.D. Drew, no one was talking about or worried about his leadership.
By the way, I never thought we'd have a J.D. Drew comparison and reference tonight. You really dug deep for that one. But getting to know you over the last 20 minutes, I think you're going to make it work. So I'm sorry to interrupt,
but
I'm fascinated by this now.
I'll try and stick the landing. But my point here is the demeanor of those two is that laid-back vibe where whether a play or what's going on with them off the field or off the court, whatever it is, could be eating them up inside or have them elevated and starving to get to the next level in their careers as individual performers. And you would never be able to read that externally based on how they express themselves. And especially with Tatum, he's got that laid-back Southern vibe to him. Sometimes he answers questions and he says all the right things, but it doesn't come off with that passion that people want to hear from the answer, like when Marcus Smart talks. But it doesn't mean that he means it any less. He comes from a different geographical region of the world and has a different way of expressing himself externally. And so the cameras are not going to allow you to see when he just quietly gives someone that little vote of confidence, for instance. So it's really hard to grade his leadership.
Sure.
And, of course, like you said, he's still at an early stage in his career where he is the superstar who, if the Celtics are going to win a championship anytime soon, he's going to be on the team and he's going to continue to be the best player on the roster. So they're going to need him and he's going to have time to grow into that. But I do think it's just hard to critique it when someone isn't as expressive in how they go about leading a team, and that it does work in the sense that, no, Marcus is not the first, second, or third best player on the team, but to have that dynamic with Tatum being more laid back, with, for the short term, Tristan Thompson and Evan Fournier, veterans, the former championship pedigree, I think that mix can work.
I hope it can, but I'm feeling like, at least according to fans that I've been talking to and listening to the radio and really embracing what this Celtics team is going to try to do here in the playoffs, I'm afraid that people are going to freak out because Jason Tatum's going to flame out in these playoffs, and we're going to say goodbye to Tatum far too soon in this town. It is the Sports Map Radio Network, and we are...
You're listening to the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
And of course, the Diehards radio show on the National SportsMap Radio Network is proud to announce our partnership with Mamitas. It's a hard seltzer with real tequila, sparkling water, and natural flavors. It's only 95 calories with only 5% alcohol by volume. Flavors include lime, mango, paloma, and pineapple. Mamitas keeps it light and refreshing while staying authentic to iconic tequila cocktails that have inspired bartenders for decades upon decades. Ask for them today at your local retailer or favorite watering hole. For more information, check them out at drinkmamitas.com. That's drinkmamitas.com. Or follow them on Twitter and Instagram at drinkmamitas, hashtag mucho delicious. And Pep gave me a couple of cases of Mamitas. It's very good. I'm not a big seltzer guy. It's actually very good. Patrick Gilroy, Bobby Kravinsky hanging out with you guys right here on the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network, taking you guys up until 10 o'clock Eastern time this evening, as this is shocking what's happened here in game one of the play-in tournament. Indy is just all over Charlotte. 2 minutes to go in this one. Indy with 141 points on the board.
I thought the Pacers were ready to go to Cancun, but they had packed it in. There's all the reports about how they don't like their coach. When that's coming to the light and made public, more often than not, that head coach is going to lose their job at the end of the season, and maybe it doesn't even take that long to happen. The night after those reports came out, a third-string center who's only been in the league a handful of years, Goga Bizdate, I'm just going to butcher that last name. It's a really tough one without the phonetics. I went for it. Big swing and a miss. No regrets. Anyways, so this third-string center who's been in the league for like 3 or 4 years turns around to an assistant coach and tells him to sit the bleep down. And so it was just a sign of the chaos there.
Yep.
I did not see this coming. They lose Caris LeVert, who unfortunately has to enter health and safety protocols. So he's out. He's not going to be there for the next game either. I'm with you. I can't believe that there's going to be a next game for the Indiana Pacers.
Yeah, the Pacers, I mean, they really came to play tonight. And look, they may not like their coach, but somebody, whether it's the coach or one of they do have some tantalizing veteran talent on that team. There are players on the Pacers that I would like to see on a team like the Celtics, right? So they do have talent, but I wonder if this is a fluke or if somebody rallied them together. If we're going to read about or hear about in the post-game presser, you know, I don't know, Sabonis got everybody together and hyped him up. There's got to be something more to this. And to Charlotte, this is wildly disappointing. Charlotte's a team that has been up and down all year, but more up than down, one of the surprise teams in the Eastern Conference. Again, you know, tantalizing young talent on that team. And from a Celtics fan's perspective, at different times this season, you're watching Hayward and Rozier go out there and tear it up, and you're thinking to yourself, did we get rid of the wrong players? And here they are, and you know, it looks like it's going to be a quick exodus from these playoffs here this year. And I wonder if this is going to tempt Michael to make some moves in the offseason, or if he believes in the roster that he has created here that did have some success in the Eastern Conference.
Well, so what's interesting is at the deadline, one of the guys they went hard after is Miles Turner,
yep,
Indiana Pacers, and obviously it didn't happen. I wonder if they revisit the matter in the offseason, because I think the Pacers would still love to move on from Turner and his contract more specifically. So I think Charlotte is definitely going to be comparable to where the Atlanta Hawks felt they were this past offseason, where there was basically a mandate from ownership, get to the playoffs, get Trae Young some postseason experience. They didn't expect to be the fifth seed in the East,
right?
But it's a wacky season where a lot of teams are around 500 because of the impact of the pandemic. And so with the Hornets, I think they're in a similar boat where they look at their situation and say, we have enough talent. We doled out a max contract to Gordon Hayward that – we should be able to be aggressive this offseason about building our squad to the point where we can get LaMelo Ball some more legitimate playoff experience.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting offseason for them. And there's a handful of teams that I'm going to watch pretty intensely this offseason, Charlotte being one of them. You just mentioned the other one, the Atlanta Hawks. They are a team that, for as long as I've been alive, the Hawks have had a few decent runs at it, but they've never been able to sort of break out of being the Atlanta Hawks. And all the way up through, nine years ago at this point, the Al Horford teams that won 60 games, had the best record in the league, and, you know, continue to flame out year after year after year. Trae Young's one of those super young, talented players that there's a certain belief that you can build a franchise around him. I look at him and I see all of this talent, but I'm not sure if I see somebody that's capable of being a franchise leader of a championship team. I see a guy that could be a great number two option. And the league has never had more potentially great number twos than they've had right now. But I feel like the league is lacking those number ones, the alphas, the ones that you know, if you get this guy, you have a chance to compete for a championship. And throughout the course of NBA history, there's always been maybe a half a dozen to a dozen of those guys in the league at any given time. Now, in the 80s and 90s, those guys existed, but players didn't switch teams the way they do now. So if you had one, you had one, generally speaking, for the long haul. Charles Barkley comes to mind as somebody that was able to do it for two different franchises, pretty much split his time between what he did in Philly and what he did with the Suns, leaving out the end of his career with the Rockets. You look at a guy like him, and you know if you get a Charles Barkley, then you can go from worst to first and at least put yourself in contender status. Shaquille O'Neal was the same way. He elevated the Orlando Magic, a expansion team, from nothing to a finals contender, and then he goes to the Lakers and he wins championships. He goes to Miami, wins a championship. Are there guys in the league right now that are coming up on free agency, or maybe you're in a bad situation that you look at and you say, that guy could be a number one. He could be the difference between Charlotte or Boston or Atlanta competing to win championships or flaming out in the playoffs. Even a team like the Utah Jazz, great team, incredible record this year. I'm not a big believer in Utah. Is there somebody where you add that guy to one of these teams and all of a sudden things change?
There's certainly not a number one available because Giannis re-signed with the Bucks over the offseason, which you know the league office was loving.
Yeah.
That unfolded. And when it comes to Atlanta, it's so interesting. I talked about this on this very program this past Friday, where I think that is an under-the-radar free agent destination. And I'm particularly looking for more of those so there's more parity in terms of how many teams can legitimately compete for titles. And it's great to see how many teams are on that tier this season, where there's three in the East. We all know them, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, Philly. And there's four in the West, and there would have been five if the Nuggets stayed healthy. And then you have teams like Miami, like what Boston would have been if Jaylen Brown was healthy. So it's great to see the state of the league from a competition perspective right now, where it's a lot of big twos as opposed to big threes. And then when it comes to the Hawks, though, the big question, and I'm sorry, Atlanta fans, especially the ones who didn't already hear me say this on Friday, I don't know how many of those upper echelon superstars around the league want to go play with Trae Young specifically. And this is a venture where those players typically get their first choice when they're looking to move. And so with Trae Young, he's a great passer. Yes, he's gotten better at working out friction with the likes of John Collins this season and being more of a distributor, but I still think that the reputation is this is a ball-dominant point guard, and so those other players would rather team up with different superstars than Trae Young.
It's interesting to me to see how things evolve over the coming years, and I say that because I look at a guy like Chris Paul. Chris Paul goes to Phoenix, and all of a sudden Phoenix becomes, I assume, one of those teams in the West that you're talking about.
Absolutely.
Right now. Okay, they become the best or one of the best teams in the best conference in the NBA because of one guy, a 35-year-old point guard, who has had his ups and downs and more downs than ups in his postseason career. But he's one of those guys that's wildly respected by his teammates. He's still got enough left in the tank to be dominant when he needs to be. But I look around the league, and I don't see many of those guys. And last offseason, if the Celtics, I don't know, had traded Kemba Walker for Chris Paul, I don't think fans would have been over the moon excited for trading for an often injured 34-year-old point guard at the time. But you see the impact that a guy like Chris Paul has, and it's front and center on display right now with what Phoenix is doing. Are there under-the-radar guys like him that you can think of that may become available that can elevate one of these teams, or guys like that, you know, hard to find these days as well?
I think that what happens is those moves are difficult to anticipate, But sometimes you know it when you see it. Team brings in veteran player X, and you say he's going to really help elevate that franchise. Or it takes until the season actually unfolding to notice it and be cognizant that, hey, look at the impact he's having. With Chris Paul, the other thing is that Phoenix had already put a lot of those pieces in place. You looked at last year when they go to Orlando, when the season resumes, they went 8-0.
Yep.
They just had such a poor start that they weren't able to get into the play-in tournament even, let alone the playoffs. And so Chris Paul was the missing ingredient from both a leadership and an organization on the floor standpoint. But Phoenix already had a lot of good elements to what they were doing. And then, like you said, as far as attracting free agents goes, warm weather.
Yep.
The taxes are bearable and the sales tax are low. So there's a lot of ingredients there that might not overwhelm you like a Miami, but still are in place. And now you look at the culture change that Monty Williams, who just got coach of the year, and James Jones have already done, where we're not talking about Robert Sarver and what a poor owner he is. So all of a sudden, Phoenix, absolutely, when Chris Paul's contract comes off the books, people are going to line up to go play with Devin Booker in Phoenix.
So I'm glad you just brought up coaching because it's something we're going to talk about to start the second hour of the show. It deserves more than just a couple of minutes. But whether it's here in Boston where you're seeing fans really turn on Brad Stevens despite the fact that he has taken this team to the conference finals 3 out of the last 4 years, despite the fact that he's elevated players that had no business being elevated to all-star status in the past, and despite the fact that after Doc Rivers left the franchise, people were really questioning the direction, where was this team going to go from there? And Brad comes in, he stabilizes things, and he really does get the best of his talent up until, I think, this year. Is there a ceiling for guys like Brad Stevens? I want to get into that with you. And compare and contrast him a little bit to what's happening in New York with Tom Thibodeau. Because Tom Thibodeau is a guy that we knew here back in Boston, won a championship as an assistant under Doc with the Celtics in 08. He had a nice run when he was with the Derrick Rose-led Bulls, but eventually Tibbs tends to burn his players out. But if you listen to the players in New York right now, they love the guy, and they credit him with a lot of their success. And I'm wondering whether it's the Celtics or some of these other teams that are all bunched up in the Eastern Conference. Is the league going to move more towards guys that, I don't know, were former players, guys that these guys might have played a video game? You know, Doc Rivers. I played as Doc Rivers. You know, I think that means something maybe to a Jason Tatum or a Jaylen Brown or a Trae Young, as opposed to Jason Tatum looking at a guy like Brad Stevens, who was a decent college basketball player, but really that basketball respect, does it come to a point where, okay, man, I've made 3 all-star teams, I'm the face of the franchise, you're going to tell me how to play this game? Because I know that was a thing with players back in the day. I know it was. We covered these teams intensely, and the Celtics weren't very good, so we got unprecedented access back then. But then you saw a guy like Jimmy O'Brien come here and get the best out of this basketball team. So for every guy, for every time players say, hey, I want to play for a former player, somebody that's recognizable. We've heard a lot lately about Kendrick Perkins. Could he join the Celtics coaching staff because of how opinionated he's been on TV? Do they need a guy like him to come in here to lead this franchise? I don't think that's the case. But again, my whole thing is, if you told me tomorrow that the Celtics fired Brad Stevens and they brought Perk in to lead the franchise, there's a certain segment of fans that would think that that's the right move. And that scares the bejesus out of me when it comes to the future of this sport. And it's really nothing that these players should be proud of. There's a difference between a player and a coach. And sometimes I feel like that line is really, really blurred. So I want to get your feelings on the coaching in the NBA today. How important is it? Or is it really, truly all about the players and all about the talent? We are the Diehards. My name is Patrick Gilroy. His name is Bobby Kravinsky, sitting in here for Anthony Pepe. So Bobby is my friend tonight. I don't know where Pepe is. Usually when he bags out,
probably at the softball diamond, if I had to guess.
His daughters were out front a little while ago. So I wonder if Pepe's creeping around a corner somewhere just watching us.
Yeah, he's listening from somewhere else. It's unknown.
It's certainly possible. But we are the Diehards from the Pepe compound right here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life.
Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
We are the Diehards right here, Sports Map Radio Network. Patrick Gilroy, Bobby Krivisky hanging out with you guys until 10 o'clock Eastern time this evening, talking hoops with you guys. Of course, our number one of the program brought to you by our good friends at Rocket Mortgage. When you guys need any kind of mortgage, any kind of home loan, never forget that Rocket can. Our number one is down, and that was a fast hour. I think it went by really fast because nobody was here to tell us not to talk hoops for a straight hour. It might not be the most widely accepted program out there. We did an appeal to the widest audience.
But we went around the league.
We did. But the hoop heads out there certainly are happy with tonight's show. The hockey guys, baseball guys, there's other shows that they can listen to.
What's going on in baseball right now that's worth talking about? Honestly, the biggest storyline, whether it's different states opening up capacity at the venues or Mike Trout's injury.
Those are things worth talking about, but when how many fans are going to be in the stands is what dominates the conversation, you know there's not a whole hell of a lot going on.
It's playoff time.
It is playoff time, and it will be interesting to see, and we just talked about this a second ago, maybe the Celtics will have 20,000 in the stands if they get there. Our number one of the diehards in the books, our number two, starts when we come back. Rick Horro, the sports professor, he'll join us coming up here in the 9 o'clock hour.